Good morning. It's great to see the Zendo all filled on a cold winter morning. And I particularly appreciate the people who came from a distance to be with us today, the people who drove from New England and maybe other places. It's great to have you here with us. I wanted to talk today about, as I was about to come in, I said, this is a touchy subject. And I said, why is it touchy? And the subject is intimacy, which is something we hear over and over and over again. Be intimate, not intimate enough. Be intimate with Mu. Be truly intimate. Be intimate with yourself. You know, but what does it mean? What are we talking about when we talk about intimacy? And that phrase, touchy subject, I realized was just kind of a joke, because if you can touch it, it's not intimacy. So in that sense, it's kind of touchy. Fortunately, in our study text, chosen by our Shuso and Roshi, there's a wonderful figure, a laywoman, in 18th century Japan, who seems to, the stories about her seem to center on this theme of intimacy, and her lively personality comes down to us through the ages. Apparently she was the niece of Hakuin Zenji, and was deeply enlightened from a very early age. Her name was Satsujo, and there are three stories about her in the collection at various stages in her life. So, you know, as maybe a young adult, there's a story about how she beats Hakuin in Dharma combat by asking him to explain a koan and bowing before he's even able to open his mouth. Then there's another story of her in old age when she's weeping bitterly because one of her grandchildren has just died, and a know-nothing monk from the monastery scolds her and says, you're supposed to be enlightened, and you've been practicing for many years. You know, why are you in such disarray over death? And she basically rips him a new one and says, you don't understand. My tears are more central to what's going on than all the funeral services that could ever be performed. And most delightfully of all, there is a story about her when she is very young, maybe a teenager, about 16, and already she'd had a very strong interest and connection with the Dharma. Apparently she was kind of a weird kid, you know, maybe too bright for her own good, and maybe too bright to have the possibility of catching a good husband. And so her parents directed her to pray to a canon, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, that she would find a husband, and so she did over and over and over again, and night and day, and you know the way you're supposed to work on Mu, Apparently before long she had a deep enlightenment, and her father walked in on her and found her sitting on his copy of the Lotus Sutra, one of the holiest texts in East Asian Buddhism. And he was horrified. He says, what are you doing sitting on the Holy Lotus Sutra? She looks up at him and says, tell me, Father, how is this wonderful sutra different from my ass? So it's a funny story, and probably this answer could maybe only have been given by a teenager, but it captures something extremely important about the nature of intimacy. In other words, when we're truly intimate with the Lotus Sutra, when we're intimate with the precepts, with the Dharma, with the teachings, it's both as close and as ordinary as what meets our cushion when we sit down. It's intimacy is not special, it's just us at this moment. It's not something to reach for, something to attain, something that only the smart or talented students get a glimpse of. How is it different than our own ass? So it seems like it should be a very simple matter to be intimate. Well, why is it not so simple? Well, the basic problem is our feeling that we're separate from it. Great Master Yunmen described this feeling of separation and its various results. He described them as sicknesses, and he says, when the light does not penetrate freely, there are two kinds of sickness. One is when all places are not clear and there is something before you. The other is having penetrated the emptiness of all things, subtly it seems like there is something. This too is the light not penetrating freely. And if you read Dharma talks about these sicknesses, and he mentions two more which are advanced practitioners are particularly prone to. But, you know, there's different interpretations of exactly what these sicknesses are. But to me, they all come down in one way or another to separation. So the first one is when all places are not clear and there is something before you, that sort of captures our beginner's mind to me. When there's some feeling that we're lacking, that, you know, there's something we're not getting, there's something we don't have. And if we could just attain enlightenment, that feeling of lack, sadness, depression, low self-esteem, whatever it is, would clear up just like that. So at any stage, but I think particularly in the early stage, when it feels like there's something out there you gotta get, that keeps you from being intimate. It's out there. It's not here. It's not living on your cushion right at this moment. And then he says, having penetrated the emptiness of all things, subtly it seems like there is something. This too is the light not penetrating freely. So this is, you know, someone who's been practicing for a few years and, you know, they have a big experience or a big insight and they think they've got something. I've seen something. I know something. I understand something. But if it's something you see, understand, or know, then it's something that's separate from you and you cling to it so that you don't lose it. This too is a barrier to intimacy. So, because we feel that we are separate, we feel inadequate, like it's out there, something we're not good enough to reach. And because we feel that we are separate, once we have a glimmer, we hold on to it for dear life, for fear it could be taken away from us because it's not our ass. No one goes around in fear that their ass can be taken away from them. Sometimes I go around in fear that my ass will be handed to me, but not that it will be taken away from me. So there's a charming story about two very advanced practitioners that really shows these sicknesses in action, about the two famous monks, Ganto and Seppo. And the backstory is that Ganto was one of these whiz kid students to whom practice came easily. And though he was younger than Seppo, he attained deep realization much sooner. So he was the younger of the two, but he was the more senior in the Dharma. And Seppo is just the opposite of a whiz kid. He was earnest, plodding, a hard worker. He was the Tenzo for many years. And, you know, if I could just work hard enough, I'll get it. And he made gradual progress in his practice. So at the time of this story, the two of them, who were very close friends, were going on a pilgrimage and traveling on Tortoise Mountain in Li province. And they temporarily got stuck in an inn during a snowstorm. And of course, there were no snow plows in those days. So if you got stuck in a blizzard, you were really snowed in. And each day, Ganto spent the entire day sleeping in character. And Sui Feng, in character, spent each day earnestly sitting in Zen meditation. And finally, Seppo got very bugged with his Dharma brother. You know, he's been sitting hour after hour after hour, and his Dharma brother is just snoozing. And he says, "Brother, get up!" And Ganto goes, "What is it?" Sui Feng says, "Don't be idle. Monks on pilgrimage have profound knowledge as their companion. This companion must accompany us at all times. But here today, all you are doing is sleeping." So, in terms of intimacy, can you see the problem here? Monks on pilgrimage have profound knowledge as a companion, as something separate. And this companion, we got to hold on to it. This companion must accompany us at all times. And all you're doing is sleeping. You're not spending no time with your companion here, bro. Yanto yelled back, just eat your fill and sleep. Sitting there in meditation is like being some clay figure in a villager's hut. Well, we can say that Yanto lost quite a bit in this response. You know, he seems to be saying, oh, no, that's not the way. This is the way. And again, there's a kind of separation. But it's coming from a very compassionate place. And as we see in a minute, the conversation takes a serious turn. Next, Seppo's great thirst for the Dharma, his great sincerity comes out, and he points to his chest and says, I feel unease here. I don't dare cheat myself by not practicing diligently. And Yanto says, if that's really so, then reveal your understanding, and where it's correct, I'll confirm it for you. Where it's incorrect, I'll root it out. Here he's kind of like the doctor ministering to Yunmen's two sicknesses. Tell me your symptoms, and I'll try to help you out. I'll try to heal you. So then Sui Feng starts listing all his various wonderful encounters with the Dharma. He says, when I first went to Yangguan's place, I heard him expound on emptiness and form. And at that time, I found an entrance. Well, many of us have had the experience of hearing some bit of teaching and going, oh, something clicks. But Yanto goes, for the next 30 years, don't speak of this matter again. I don't want to hear about the openings you had listening to the Heart Sutra or some teacher. Sui Feng then says, later, I asked, this is their mutual teacher, Daishan, I asked Daishan, can a student understand the essence of the ancient teachings? He struck me and said, what did you say? At that moment, it was like the bottom falling out of a bucket of water. Some of you may know this phrase, a bottom falling out of a bucket, is a stock phrase in the teachings. It basically means I had Kensho. He had an enlightenment experience. Fireworks went off. Well, what's the problem there? Well, you know, the Kensho experience, the big enlightenment experience, you know, to me, it's like a great sexual experience. It's one of the most wonderful and valuable experiences a human being can have. And when it's over, it's over. What then? Well, next is going to be time to smoke a cigarette. And then you're going to notice that the ashtray is smelly, so you take it over and dump it. And then you notice that the garbage is overflowing and you got to take the garbage out into the 10-degree weather. So if it's any one particular experience, it can't be intimate because experiences come and go. Your ass isn't an experience, especially if you're in good health. Your ass follows you wherever you go, no matter what kind of mood you're in, no matter what circumstances you're in. And then Yanto, after Sui Feng tells him about his big enlightenment experience, says, haven't you heard it said that what comes in through the front gate isn't the family jewels? Anything that can be grabbed onto, gained, lost, anything that comes in from, quote, the outside, teachings, sutras, you name it, enlightenment experiences, what comes in through the front gate isn't the family jewels. Not yet, not yet. Well, Suifeng, by this time, Seppo, by this time, is desperate. He says, well, then in the future, what should I do? And Yanto said, in the future, if you want to expound a great teaching, then it must flow forth from your own breast. In the future, your teaching and mine will cover heaven and earth. If you want to expound a great teaching, if you want to save all beings, if you want to be truly intimate, it must flow forth from your own breast. And Wei Suifeng heard this. He experienced unsurpassed enlightenment, bowed and said, elder brother, at last, Tortoise Mountain has attained the way. Tortoise Mountain has attained the way. How could he say that? It's very similar to what the Buddha said upon his great enlightenment. How wonderful at this moment all beings and myself have attained the way. This is the statement of true intimacy. It goes beyond sameness and difference. Is he the same as Tortoise Mountain? Is he different? When the feeling of separation disappears, what is realized is that there is nothing, no piece of stuff that can be pointed to as being either the same or different. This is the central teaching of the Buddha Dharma. There isn't stuff. There isn't a piece of stuff there that can become enlightened. There isn't an abiding mental state with some particular content that can be called enlightenment. You can say, I have attained the way. You can say, Tortoise Mountain has attained the way. You can say, all sentient beings have attained the way at this moment. And the realization is basically simple. As Dogen Zenji says, it's the realization that there is no such thing as an abiding self. Some of you may be familiar with his famous metaphor of the boat, where he says, when you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. I think that's very interesting. For what he doesn't say, so you look at the shore and it looks like the shore is moving, and then you look down and you see that the boat is moving. But what he doesn't say is the shore is still and the boat is moving, so it looks like the shore is moving when it's really not. He doesn't say that. He says, you look and you see the shore moving, and you look down and you see the boat moving. There's just movement. There's no still place to be found where you can say, okay, the boat, it's the boat that's really moving. There's just movement. And then Dogen goes on to say, similarly, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and essence are permanent. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. So, the realization is actually very simple. And the only thing that makes it hard is our delusion that we're a piece of stuff, and that the world is moving around us, and that this piece of stuff has to get something called enlightenment, so that this piece of stuff can ease its mind, and then once it's attained enlightenment, there will be an abiding space, an abiding place of peace and joy. That's the delusion. It's the delusion of stuff. And it's the feeling that we're stuff in the midst of other stuff that keeps us from being intimate with ourself and others, which basically keeps us from sitting on our own ass. It should be simple, and yet it's so hard. The state of intimacy is ordinary. You know, your ass is behind you, your nose is in front of you. Dogen said, I didn't learn anything in Great Song China except that my eyes are horizontal and my nose is vertical. So, you know, when we meditate for a long time and get little sleep, oftentimes people have big revelations, enlightenment experiences, and they're wonderful and they're completely valid at that moment. But the bells and the whistles are not required in true intimacy. True intimacy is an extremely ordinary state. Dogen says, when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddha. Wow, God, how do I do that? Well, you might look at our Tenzo. Do you really think that when he's going through all the hundreds of steps that it takes to produce the meal that he's going to serve us in a few minutes, that he's being very mindful and looking at each kernel of rice? Or that he's having wonderful bliss experiences, you know, as he's peeling whatever he's peeling and straining whatever he's straining? He's preparing a meal. He's doing what it takes to prepare a meal for 25 or 30 people. His teaching is flowing out from his own breast, not as some sutra that's been memorized or some experience that he's trying to recall and recapture. He's simply serving the Sangha because it's his job and has been for many years. And we will be enjoying the fruits of his teaching very soon. It's not special. It's not ordinary. But it's extremely intimate. His teaching will become part of us and will flow out from us as well. both physically and hopefully in the form of our own devoted practice of the Dharma as we go about our day. So what became of Seppo after his enlightenment? Well, he truly became intimate with himself. He no longer sat in the midst of a pure white world and had to sit 24/7 to realize he was sitting in a pure white world. He could go out and help others. He could serve others. He could teach and could direct others to the simplicity and the beauty of intimacy. And I'll wind up with a wonderful little story about him when he was the teacher of 1,500 monks. Sui Feng Seppo asked a monk, "Where are you from?" The monk said, "From Shengguang." Shengguang apparently is the Chinese word for spirit light. So he asked him, "Where are you from?" And the monk says, "I'm from spirit light." And Seppo asked, "During the day it's called daylight. At night it's called firelight. What is it that's called spirit light?" The monk couldn't answer. Speaking for the monk, Sui Feng Seppo said, "Daylight, firelight."